What if the very suffering you're trying to escape holds the key to your freedom? A Vietnamese monk once sat beneath a tree, watching bombs fall around him during wartime, and discovered something revolutionary. Our pain isn't the problem, our relationship with it is. This insight, refined over decades of practice and teaching, forms the beating heart of Buddhist wisdom. But unlike ancient texts that feel distant and abstract, this teaching speaks directly to our modern chaos, the anxiety spiraling at 3 a.m., the anger that hijacks our conversations, the restless hunger that no amount of scrolling can satisfy. What makes these teachings radical isn't their age, but their immediacy. They work now, in this breath, with whatever you're carrying. Suffering exists, not as punishment, but as fundamental to being human. The Buddha didn't discover suffering. He discovered how to work with it. Like a doctor examining symptoms rather than denying illness, the First Noble Truth acknowledges reality without drama. Your heartbreak is real. Your anxiety matters. The Second Noble Truth reveals suffering's identifiable roots. We consume what poisons us: toxic media, destructive relationships, corroding beliefs. Our suffering stems from craving what we lack, clinging to what we have, and fleeing what scares us. These aren't moral failures, they're patterns we can learn to see. The Third Noble Truth offers genuine hope. Well-being isn't just possible, it's your birthright. Not someday after you've fixed everything, but accessible now through different choices. When a toothache stops, you suddenly understand that its absence is happiness. We chase extraordinary pleasures while forgetting the miracle of an ordinary morning without pain. Cessation of suffering doesn't require perfection. It requires recognizing what's already working. 8 practices form the roadmap, but they're not steps. They're facets of a single diamond, each containing all the others. Right view comes first because perception shapes everything. Most suffering springs from seeing incorrectly, mistaking the rope for a snake, the temporary for the permanent. When you look at a table, can you trace back to the forest, the rain, the carpenter's hands, the entire web of conditions that brought it into being? That shift in seeing changes everything. Right thinking follows naturally. Notice how your mind churns constantly, like a radio that won't turn off. Most thoughts are reruns, yesterday's arguments, tomorrow's anxieties, the same tired narratives. Through mindfulness, we learn to ask, is this thought useful? When habit energy pulls you toward familiar suffering, you can simply say, hello, old friend, and choose differently. Right speech sounds simple until you try it. Words create worlds or destroy them. But sometimes the most powerful speech is silence. Not the cold shoulder, but the warm presence that needs no words. When someone shares their pain, they don't need your solutions. They need your full attention. That thundering silence communicates more than 1,000 sympathetic phrases. Mindfulness isn't a technique. It's an energy, a way of being fully alive to whatever's happening. Right now, your breath is moving. Your heart is beating. Light is making this reading possible. These are miracles we've learned to ignore. When you practice mindfulness of the body, you're not escaping, but arriving fully in your physical reality. Feel your feet on the ground. Notice tension in your shoulders. This body isn't a vehicle for your brain, it's your home. Feelings arise constantly, pleasant, unpleasant, neutral. We spend enormous energy chasing pleasant feelings and fleeing unpleasant ones. But you can simply observe feelings without being controlled by them. When anger arrives like a house fire, mindful breathing becomes the firefighter. The mind itself becomes an object of observation. Mental formations, recurring patterns of thought and emotion, exist as seeds in your consciousness, waiting for conditions to sprout. Through mindfulness, you learn which seeds to water. You wouldn't cultivate weeds in your garden, yet we water seeds of anxiety and resentment daily through what we consume and where we place our attention. Ethics aren't abstract principles, but practical expressions of wisdom. Right action means your hands become instruments of care rather than harm, extending beyond obvious violence to subtler forms like exploitation in your shopping cart, environmental costs of convenience, and human suffering embedded in cheap goods. When you truly see interconnection, you can't help but act differently. Right Livelihood asks, does your work add to the world's suffering or its healing? We live in complex systems where almost every job involves compromise. The question isn't perfection, but direction. Are you moving toward more compassion or less? Consider how you spend your days. Can you bring mindfulness to answering phones, serving customers, or sitting in meetings? When you treat the telephone bell as a reminder to breathe, work becomes practice. When you smile genuinely at a difficult customer, you're practicing right livelihood regardless of your job title. The path isn't separate from ordinary life. It's woven into every interaction, every choice, every moment of awareness. Nothing exists independently. This isn't philosophy, but observable reality. These words require trees, electricity, countless hands, the entire history of language and technology. The boundary between you and not you is far fuzzier than it appears. Understanding non-self isn't nihilistic, it's liberating. When you recognize that your happiness and others' happiness aren't separate, compassion becomes natural. Impermanence runs through everything. Your body replaces cells constantly. Your thoughts arise and dissolve. The person you were 5 years ago literally isn't the same person reading this now. Yet we cling desperately to permanence, building castles on sand and wondering why they crumble. These aren't separate teachings, but different angles on the same truth. Impermanence and non-self point toward nirvana. Not some distant heaven, but the ground of being itself, accessible right now. Like waves that are already water, you already contain what you're seeking. The practice isn't about becoming something different, but recognizing what's already true. Real love requires understanding, not romantic fantasy, but mature recognition that sees clearly and cares anyway. The four immeasurable minds offer a framework: love that brings joy, compassion that relieves suffering, joy that celebrates others' happiness, and equanimity that preserves freedom. These aren't feelings you wait for, but capacities you cultivate through practice. Love without understanding becomes a cage. When your partner comes home frustrated, they don't need solutions, they need presence. That quality of listening without judgment, without planning your response, is itself an act of love. Compassion means feeling another's suffering without being destroyed by it. Like a doctor who touches infected wounds without becoming infected, you develop capacity to be with pain without drowning in it. The Buddha didn't offer beliefs to adopt, but practices to verify through experience. These teachings aren't about becoming a Buddhist, but about becoming fully human, awake to this moment, responsive to suffering, capable of genuine love. Your breath is always available. This moment is always new. The Buddha within you is ready to wake up, not someday, but right now, in this breath. The lotus grows from mud. Your suffering isn't an obstacle to awakening, it's the very soil from which wisdom blooms.